Hi, welcome. I'm Andrew Gall. This is one of a series of discussions with executives who are leading strategic change, innovation, and venturing. We will hear from them with about an introduction to themselves and their organisation, and we will then be discussing the impact and the mitigation of this pandemic crisis. In the live sessions, we have questions and in-depth discussions with senior peers during this session. We have now edited out those sort of discussions for confidentiality of those participants. The resources and podcasts are available with videos on the Aim of Our Resources website. Please enjoy, make comments, and do get in touch. Thank you.
Very pleased to welcome Bernard Mauer, who is head of Evonik Ventures. Before the call, Eric and I, Bernard and I were really sort of thinking, when did we first meet each other? And it was going back to BASF, probably at least a dozen years ago and that now, that since we've known each other and been through the corporate venturing journey. So, Bernard, it'd be great for you to share your perspectives with us, please, and give us an introduction to Evonik and what you're dealing with in the current crisis.
Thank you for inviting all of us and providing a platform for such a relevant discussion. Hello to the rest of the participants here. Unfortunately, I did not have the pleasure to meet any of you, but I think this is probably a good start to meet you today. Yes, as Andrew said, I think we go back some 10 years, and actually my venture capital career goes back more some 15 years. I started my professional career with BASF. I'm a chemist by training, so very typical then. I started in a lab, was then also closely engaged with one of our biggest customers. And then took over a responsibility for controlling, was heading the controlling activities for BASF in Spain, was then promoted in a marketing function, and rather coincidentally came into the venture team of BASF, which was then also supposed to be a short-term assignment. But this short-term assignment now became a 16-year track record for me in venture capital, most recently 8 years ago I joined Evonik Industries in Germany to set up and run their corporate venture capital team. For those of you who do not know Evonik, Evonik is a specialty chemicals company. We have around about 32,000 employees globally. Last year we posted sales of round about 2.2 billion in a very profitable way. So we had EBIT of around about, we had 13 billion sales and an EBIT of 2.5 billion sales. So an EBITDA ratio of between 16 and 70%. So very profitable business. Also remarkable for us, we are a leader in most of the business we do. So 80% of the businesses we run as a market leader or being number two or three. So in order to do this, of course, you need to be a leader in innovation, and innovation is also a key of our success. And this was also the motive for Evonik to start a venture capital team in 2012. We do have a strategic / financial mandate. Whatever we do has to have a strategic rationale. Typically, we do work with the companies we invest in, but there's also a strong financial motive. So we would look at the very same financial metrics as a purely financial VC. We started in 2012 with a small team of three, which now has become a team of 12 investment professionals with offices in Germany. We run two offices in Germany. We have one office in the United States in Persephone, and we started our activities also in Asia, where since 2018 we also have a local person on ground, and most recently a bit more than a month ago, we also opened an office in Israel, in Tel Aviv, where we have a local venture partner. Since inception in 2012, we have done some 30 investments. We are doing both direct investments, but also fund investments. And also our investments run globally. So at this point in time, we have probably 45% of our investments in North America, 45% in Europe, and most recently, we also started to do direct investments in Asia. Our areas of investment, as I said, are based on chemistry. This is really an investment that help us to enhance our own growth activities. We also open new interesting fields where we want to grow in. And most recently, we also became very active in the digital arena. So out of the 7 or 8 investments we have done over the past 18 months, about 50% of these investments have a strong angle to digital.
Structurally, are you a separate GP LP or internal allocation every year so your funding can be at risk during a downturn? How have you guys structured that?
Very interesting question. So we are a separate legal entity in order to really also operate. And when it comes to investing, also stay at arm's length to your corporate parent. So we are a separate legal entity. We have only one LP, which is our parent company, and we do invest off balance sheet, yes. And maybe this is, if you allow me to focus a bit on this a bit longer, I think this of course is one of the key risks if you do not have a separate fund allocation, if you invest off balance sheet, there's always a risk that in whatever critical situation, the corporate parent decides that there will be no allocation this year as you are investing off balance sheet. So I think it's paramount if you start a venture capital unit, and most venture capital unit, most corporate venture capital units are being started in boom times, where you have a very strong balance sheet, where people say, yes, let's do this. And all of a sudden, you also experience a crisis. So I think it is very important to also tell your key stakeholders in the company, typically the board members, this might be the CEO, this might be the CTO, this might be the CFO. I think in an ideal situation, you talk to all of these people, just to tell them in advance that there also might be critical times and that it also will be essential to continue with your investment activities in these types in order to support your companies, but in also in order to maintain your credibility as reliable investor in the venture capital community. So use the good times to also prepare your key stakeholders for difficult situations.
You've got dry powder, as they now call it in the, you know, in the VC community. You've got funds which are sitting with your venture fund, which the company can't take back. We've already given it to you, so you now have to deal with that for follow-ons or potentially new ones. Is that the way it's gone through with your structure?
Well, I think more generally speaking, our approach is also do follow-on investments, and this is really what a company also tasks us to do, the initial investment. But whenever we do initial investments, we, as probably most professional investors do, we look at the financial numbers, and then we put up our own business plan for the company. And we also prepare ourselves to participate in follow-on rounds, typically in a pro rata participation. And this is something that we discuss early on with our investment committee. So we already early on set a scheme and says, well, this is our investment now in order to take the company to a situation where the company is cash flow positive, or in a situation where we anticipate an exit, where probably not cash positive is the exit a time frame. This is how much more money we need to reserve. Mm-hmm. in order to be able to take the company to a successful exit. So this is what we take into consideration, and this is also what we do implement now. Of course, there's always a question, does it still make sense to follow on? If we do this, or the fact that we do this early on does not mean that we automatically will participate in follow on.
Yeah.
There still must be a financial viability in order to be convinced that this is the right thing to do. Or in other words, we will participate in follow-on rounds whenever it makes sense, but we will not throw good money after bad money.
Yeah. So we've had a previous one of these sort of discussion groups with Neil Foster from the legal sort of side discussing about board participation and being on the board of a company. What's the situation with Evonik? Do you take active board seats?
We do take active board seats. Typically, we do hold participation in the range of 5 to 25% shareholding in the company, and depending on the shareholding we have, also depending a bit on the value we can generate, we ask either for a voting board seat or for an observer seat. So there is no company in our current portfolio where we do not have a board seat. However, and there was also a very interesting discussion in the conversation with Neil, you should not confuse two things. A board member, board director has fiduciary duties towards the company.
Yeah.
As its entity, and of course, in very often times, we have two people responsible for a company. One is the board member who acts on behalf of the company, and the other one is the shareholder representative that represents Evonik right in a company. And I think this becomes particularly critical in a situation where you need to make unpopular decisions in a company. So with the board hat on, of course you do whatever is needed to take the company forward. You present Evonik and what we think is in our interest here. So we differentiate this here. Of course, especially in downturn situation, in down rounds, board directors have a very difficult role, and reliability and liability plays an important role. So people on our boards are really experienced people, typically with a long-standing track record in the venture capital industry, and also with the experience that they can accompany a company in difficult situation and act properly.
Great, excellent. So Bernard, could you kick us off with some perspectives then in terms of, you know, we've started hitting in January, February, the lockdown, the virus impact in Asia, coming through to Europe, hitting the US. Certainly a number of the businesses that I've invested in as startups, we've had the challenges of going to those CEOs and saying, how are you going to deal with the cash burn and surviving that through this period, and managing your portfolio. If you can give us some insights on Evonik's approach and that to this current crisis.
Yeah, maybe to start off, I can tell you the last 8 weeks, or the last 12 weeks, probably better to say, have been, I think, when we open up the newspaper, we see a lot of people going into unemployment. We are seeing people being furloughed, but I can tell you as a venture team, I think we are working around the clock. So, probably beginning of February. So I think the very first thing we did is to reach out to most of our portfolio and engage with them very actively and ask the question, what should we do? I think the very first thing we do to protect the employees from, and then of course, the next question, what protect the business? And additional side, and what can we do on the cash preservation? We didn't wait, and of course this is also what experienced venture capitalists would always tell you, cut fast and cut deep. So don't wait as long as you still have flexibility. And this is what we did. And at this point, I'm very proud to say so far our portfolio is doing okay. And I think this certainly also is a consequence of having reacted early on, really protecting people, but also cutting costs wherever we were able to cut costs and work with the management, implement the right measure. At the same time, and I think this is a question that came up earlier, of course, we all of us have cash preservation is also very important for our mother company. So as good corporate citizens, as good our task is not only to support our portfolio companies and helping them, we all comes to our own spending to allocate the capital we have very carefully. So what we did in addition was also a planning of the resources that we do have available for follow-on investments for our current portfolio, and make sure that the resources in our hands will be distributed in such a way that we can make sure that all our portfolio companies followed on. Can be followed on.
So have you done any follow-on investments in that yet? Have you been at that situation?
We have done follow-on investments over the past couple of weeks in three cases. Yes, we have done this. Two things to it. As I think this is do as a reliable investor. Mm-hmm. Do follow-on investments, first of all. Second thing, we always talk about the venture capital industry, and we talk about the importance of people. Then we typically talk about the management teams of the companies we invest in. But I think in such crisis situation, as I think you also need to look left and right to your co-investors, and also find professional co-investors that have the capability to also continue investing with you, and I'm very happy to say we are in very good syndicates, very experienced, easier, especially, and this is the second point, of course, doing follow-on investments, terms have significantly changed over the past couple of weeks, and also this needs to be reflected properly. So still, I would say half a year ago, we had very company-friendly terms. These terms have been shifted in investor-friendly terms. So this is also now the challenge to find a good balance to continue to support your portfolio companies, but also find the right terms to follow.
So is this particularly valuations, or are you saying there are other terms which are now coming into play in terms of, you know, owning IP or, you know, downside risks or sort of stuff like that? What's your view on that?
If you ask Silicon Valley lawyers what are typical terms now for new investment rounds, they would tell you what we do see is a very strong liquidation preference. People are now talking up to 3x participating liquidation. They are anti-dilution terms like full ratchet. Of course, there are other terms that are extremely investor friendly, and valuations have come down significantly. So as I think also, if you do follow in on investments, you cannot ignore this fact. You cannot just say, well, this was the last 20% on top and let's continue finance. I think you need to be very prudent, and there is no single recipe, but I think you need to use the entire toolbox at this point in time. When you consider follow-on investments, so this might be convertible note rounds, this might be issuance of warrants. So there is no single to be very prudent. What are the terms for follow-on rounds? I think there is, it does not to really cut too deep and to penalize a company. However, also I would avoid a situation where I just say, well, let's just add a bit, and then making the company not being viable for any follow-on fund.
Yes, yeah.
Experience pays off, and again, I think also a syndicate that is capable to do the right things here.
I've been involved as a director in a startup, early stage angel one, and certainly in February, I was saying to the CEO, have they seriously got the cash and that to run for a lockdown to 6 to 9 months? And they didn't. And we very quickly went back to the shareholders and said, really, we lowered the valuation significantly, but closed around with seven of the, which are the majority of the angel investors, doing an investment around the UK tax year end in April. So they've now got cash in the bank to have a 12-month runway. But the valuation team came down considerably. We didn't get into all sorts of other funny sort of terms. Tony Askew, who was one of the speakers on one of our previous ones, one of the key points that he made about, he said, during these tough times, this is when reputations are made or lost. So if you as a corporate end up walking away and say, sorry, we're not doing any follow-ons, even if it's a good business, of course you don't do follow-ons if the business is going to run out, is going to go out of business and that anyway, but reputations of not participating, not engaging in helping those companies out, not following on at good terms, you know, so yeah, yes, you want valuation down and yes, you want some, you know, some anti-dilution rights or sort of something like that, but three times ratchet and valuations and taking too much of an advantage also could lose your reputation in that as well.
At least from what I've heard, lots of boards are bridging their portfolio companies through at least until next summer. And so I think that sustains valuation, that sustains, you know, potential uplifts in their next round next year, assuming everything kind of like continues on as expected. But I've also seen a lot of the messages change, say from the beginning of March to now, which was, yes, everything's business as usual. We're just being a bit more picky to, oh, we're not doing any new investments to, oh, we're just focusing on our existing portfolio to now, we really have to be choosy about which companies that we're going to follow on with, which then gets to the one or two, three, whatever top companies that you really think will continue on. So
yeah,
I agree that the reputation is at risk, absolutely. But I also wonder, and I pose a question to the group, that to what extent does a company's brand still sustain itself, even if it's being, unruly during a down period? And, you know, you don't need to take my company as an example of that. I'm just thinking, you know, lots of big name companies. There's plenty of startup companies that would say, you've acted poorly in the past, but I'm still interested in the brand name, the fund itself, and the access to customers. Is there a sense of immunity there that we haven't seen before that might come up?
I think my perspective to chip in there, I think, Evan, I think that those phases that you mentioned in terms of, oh, yeah, we're still investing and doing those things, I certainly saw it on both sides. I've been speaking to heads of corporate venture units as we were going into, you know, February and March, and really challenging them and challenging some of their teams, because I felt a number of the people, as Bernard was just mentioning, about who were on the boards of these startups, some of the corporates that I was speaking to, because they haven't been through a downturn before, I think they didn't realize how drastic this is going to be. And so I've seen that from those corporates, where particularly, you know, they might have only been, you know, in the corporate venturing space for 5 years or that sort of period. They haven't been through the financial crisis. They didn't go through the dot-com. They didn't go through 9/11, which is the sorts of things that I've seen in my time in this sort of space. And I could see it coming that this is going to be 9/11 and a financial crisis in every country in every month for the next 12 months. and you better sort yourself out. And also I saw it from the CEO and venture side that, oh, my business is great. We're still going to survive. Look at our growth plans for next year. And so saying, look, you know, you need to really slim all those back, because the consumer or business to business transactions are really going to be hit. So I think we have gone through this wave of denials and realism and then sort of addressing the sort of thing. So I think we've gone through part of that sort of change understanding, as well as then hitting the particular financial areas that you're sort of saying in that there.
Maybe let me add one thing. I think the very reason why I think we should do follow-on investments is not to be the hero in everything. Well, what a great guy, what a great company. I think, of course, this is also for some, you can call it very selfish reasons. I think, first of all, continue with the objective to fund the future innovation and business leaders. So I think still there's an interest, as we are convinced that a company in which we continue to investments will become very profitable companies and will deliver us strong returns. I think this is one thing. Second thing is, and this is also what, if you go back to the early 2000s, if you go back to 2007 to 2009, many very strong companies are being formed and created in the crisis.
Yeah.
So I think that now manage to weather the storm and also master this crisis have a certain likeliness to be one of the leaders in a couple of years. So just to discontinue investing at this critical point in time also might mean to miss good opportunities. And the third point, of course, is also reputation. And I'm not quite sure if you will be completely immune. I think you need to have a very, very strong value proposition to anyone else out there. If you now, as a professor, act highly unprofessional, and highly unprofessional for me is not to follow on each and every of your portfolio company. I think now is the time that you need to be very critical with new investments, but also with follow-on investments. But it's a good reason, unless also there is no cash available. But other than this is probably also the time to seek out for good opportunities and either with the better of your portfolio companies or find new interesting investment targets.
Yeah. No, I'd agree, Bernard. I think this time, this crisis is causing a huge chasm in disruption in technology change, business model change, and startups and entrepreneurs who are going to be a lot more nimble than the current incumbents within a sector. And governments are going to start pumping money into new technologies, electric vehicles, new ways of working, new ways of infrastructure to finance and invest our way out of these sort of things. And I think now is the time for corporate venturing, seeing those types of technologies and business models more than ever. So I think you're a very good point there, and your point, Evan, that with the good companies which have got a good proposition and a good team are the ones that you can double down on now and invest at a better valuation than maybe you got 6 months ago, and they're the ones who are going to survive coming out of this. This whole complexity of what's going to happen in the short term when you can't meet customers to do a bit business to business sort of type deal. What's happening in the direct to consumer? We're doing direct sort of deliveries. And I think then there's a medium term, you know, where are governments and where are companies going to focus their spending in the next 3 to 6 months as we start coming out of this? And are we going to see fundamental changes coming further out in that as well? And I suppose the bigger time horizon I tend to look at the moment is, you know, looking at what Asia went through with SARS, what Asia has gone through with mobile phones, mobile payments, lots of location artificial intelligence developments that are being done in China and other South Korea and sort of stuff like that, which are now giving them the tools to be able to get out of this. I'm seeing as well that, you know, on the social media in China, autonomous vehicles, unmanned stores, which were in development there, are now being put into action, you know, on, you know, significant scale. They're rolling out thousands of these sort of things. So I think we will see waves of these technologies, but I think you have to get the timing right. You can't spend your money too soon if the market isn't there, and I think you can't be a corporate, or, you know, maybe not, it's not just corporates who think, oh, is this just going to be a V curve, or is it going to be a U curve, or is it going to be a, you know, a bathtub? For me, these graphs aren't just going to be X, Y axis. They're going to be a Z axis as well. There's going to be disruption, which moves you and moves the dynamic for customers, supply chains, use of technologies, which is where corporate venturing should be looking, not just, are we going to be back to doing transport as we did before and just selling as many cars as we did before? Some of those disruptions are going to become more dramatic.
And Ed, if I may add to this, and I fully agree with you. I think there is very often the comparison to the 2001 crisis or to the financial crisis. I think this crisis is more complex. This crisis is different, and also this crisis has a couple of other elements like the. That the geo situation we have, I think, a very special situation with the new leadership in China, a very special situation with the new leadership in the US. So I think we also don't know for how long this crisis will take. I think at this point in time, we like our companies to be financed for 12 to 18 months. Will this be sufficient? I don't know. In any case, I'm convinced that the world will be different after this crisis. I'm very optimistic that we will overcome this crisis at some point in time, but it will be different. And I think the challenge for us also, especially with our strategic mandate, is what will be the change afterwards and what does it mean for our strategic mandate? So. No, I think the answer for all of us here on the call will be a different one. But I think that the key for us at this point in time is what will be the world afterwards for us, and how can we deliver strategic value with the things we do right now? Yeah. And this is a very, very difficult question. I think it's not like waiting until the crisis will be over. I think the crisis before also have been very severe, but I still think way less complex than the crisis that we experience at this point in time. But still, I think if you maintain the agility, if you take the right conclusion, if you start to allocate the money at the right point in time in the right companies, I think you are being suited and well placed. To deliver very strong value to your corporate parent.
Yeah, I think what you're illustrating there's a cartoon which I'll distribute, is that corporate ventures to me are at the top of the crow's nest, looking out for the pilots of the ship, looking for the new world. And the corporate business is the big oil tanker, which could be running against the iceberg, or the, you know, Titanic running against the iceberg. And we can start foreseeing the future. You know, when we're dealing with, as just Bernard's talking about, dealing with our current portfolio, we can see the portfolios that are likely to succeed dealing with this. I've got a new proposition for the short, medium and longer term, and we can follow on and do those investments. Moving the discussion forward a bit, because a number of you mentioned on that earlier about how do we do new deals? How do we look for new technologies? Because in this disruption and all the mix up now, we're going to start seeing some new technologies, some great teams which are building the future bit, and that they will start seeing the future. And the corporate venturers are the ones who are there at the sharp end, while the current core business are dealing with the day-to-day challenges and that of keeping their business going. So what's the view Bernard first and then others can come in. But what's your view about how you're going to look at new deals? You know, it's not in the next month, maybe, but in 6 months' time, you're going to start saying, wow, this is a fantastic idea and a fantastic venture and great technology. You know, how are you going to get into doing new deals?
Yeah, we do typically see probably 1,000 deals a year, typically around about 700 deals that are relevant for us. And I need to say at this point in time, this has slowed down a bit, but not significantly. So the innovation machine is still working. It's not like, as I think many parts of our daily life has come to a standstill. I think the innovation activity has not yet come to a standstill. There's a lot of interesting things out there, and we watch out for these for these opportunities. And of course, the question is, which are these really interesting things that we should not miss, that we cannot miss? This is the first question, and the second question then is, well, how can we get a good deal? Of course, a good deal means attractive terms, also being very careful with capital allocation and finding good people that are willing to syndicate with us in these interesting opportunities. There is one more thing which has been proven critical in such a situation. You of course need finance, but you also need business partners. And this is always what we do. It's not only finance companies, but also look for partners, ideally also partners in-house that are willing to work with the companies and help them. So I think this is even more important at this point in time to ask the question, who are your partners and who will help you to also in a COVID situation. And now we always ask the question to the companies, but also need to find an answer for ourselves. What is the COVID? What did you learn? What will you do differently? And do you have a good answer? If the crisis takes a bit longer, or if another crisis comes around the corner. And good companies typically have an answer for this.
Yeah, no, good point. The call we did last week, who was the person sort of speaking last week, was Min Zhao, who she's the general partner for China Materialia Ventures. So Shanghai-based, Beijing-based, and they've got six LPs, Samsung, GE, British American Tobacco, Henkel. Who were on the call, and you know, she was saying about this new deals and new opportunities. She's been back operational since the 10th of February. That's when they started when they went back to work, you know, from her fund side. And she said she's seeing fantastic deals and opportunities now in Southeast Asia, the US, and Europe. So they're actively looking out for good deals and new ventures and sort of stuff like that. So I think we're seeing that now from investors and funds globally looking and seeing business opportunities and that are coming out here. And I think the challenges for corporates, you know, they're always sort of, you know, they're always looked down on by other VCs as saying, well, the corporates only come in at the top and then bail out at the bottom. I think we have to sort of be responsible and try and make sure that our corporates and our LPs understand that this is where the opportunities are.
In the near term, it's a little bit difficult given the social distancing and lack of interaction. And candidly, I'm not comfortable unless I've had, call it old school, but had time to actually look the entrepreneur in the eye and spend some time with them and or her. And so new deals, unless they're really, really advocated by some of the business units that have a long-standing relationship with them, which is the opposite of finding new technologies, is going to be challenging in the near 3 to 6 months. I think Q1, late Q4, early Q1 next year, maybe we'll start seeing some new deals. And as you noted, with the materials company that you just mentioned, they'll be there. With adjusted valuations, and candidly, I haven't seen valuations adjust yet. I still think there's a denial period. But those should pop, they should adjust second half of the year.
Yeah, agree.
I actually had the exact same sentiment that I had planned to describe as well. I think it's too soon to tell. And I don't think it's old school that you need to sit down with startup companies and look them in the eye and see their operations. I think that's very much in keeping with how venture is deployed, how venture capital is deployed. Yeah. I mean, we don't have all the information, and the information that we do have is largely, you know, overestimated and or effectively fake numbers. So unless you do get that sensory kind of sixth sense over video conference, or you've at least received it before this whole thing started, I tend to agree. I think Q1 is a good estimate, because I think we'll start to kind of creep back out of our homes by, you know, end of Q3, early Q4, but then the holidays start. And so in terms of timing, I think that's right. And, you know, the one thing that I would add is there could be some scenarios where some creative financing is done instead. So maybe larger check firms end up doing smaller checks and doing things more like convertible notes with shorter time periods. Maybe they keep it as debt until they get to decide, you know, whether they want to convert it to equity or not, just to put the money to work. That's an option. I've heard some other companies think about doing that as well. And some of the good benefits behind that are, you know, at least in the UK, is it gets matched. Now the matching happens on equity investments, but I think there are some different schemes that exist that could really save companies that have a bright future. So, that's the only thing. Those are the only things that I would add.
I just wanted to react quickly on what you said, and I do fully agree. I think now being in the business for so many years, for me, the ultimate decision is always being made after you met the company in person, maybe had dinner together, asked a couple of critical questions. So I'm a very strong believer that there is a very strong value and information you can extract by meeting an entrepreneur and meeting a company in person. However, I think this will become increasingly different. So I think we need to start to work tools and on practices that can replace this. So I do not want to wait for another 12 months to say, well, then I can go out there again, and then I can ask my stomach again, is this a good company or bad? I think this is also now the time where we need to ask ourselves, this is how we dealt with companies before. This is how we took a decision before. Is there a different way in a more virtual world to take a decision and to take a good decision? I can't give you the answer at this point in time. I'm just convinced that any one of us would have an incredible competitive edge if we were able to develop a method where it would not be necessary to go there and meet all the people, but to do this also a bit more in a virtual way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bernard, I have to agree with you, and you're right. It is very much old time thinking. And so I think the thought is that things will just kind of get back to normal. And so you're just kind of wait until you can flex the muscles that you were kind of exercising in the past. But, you know, the flip side of the coin, I have to agree with. If this continues and money stays, you know, undeployed, you're right. We're going to have to get over it and find something else out to do.
And to your point, Evan, I mean, what happens if there's a second wave in the fall, we re-lock down? They're thinking differently. I'll still hang my hat on. I still will need to look someone in the eye to make a bet on them. But we are thinking about different ways to begin that relationship. So maybe rather than a $2 million investment, we drop the zero off of it, and it's a $200,000 investment with some additional tiers reserved for. So it becomes a prove it. That's a challenge for some people's business models, because they do need large amounts of capital to scale quickly. So again, do we completely reorient the way we do things, depending how this shakes out? I would also maybe argue how we value things based on public company multiples may also completely change given the dislocation between the real economy and massive QE buying ETFs and potentially equity.
Yeah, very good points.
I think the other point that I would raise here is that, you know, before we made investments, we not only looked the investor in the eye, but, you know, sort of the business and the founders in the eye. We also checked out within our network, because none of us realistically just looked at a pitch deck and just had one meeting. We also checked out with the previous investors. We also checked out with who else is going to be in the syndicate. And to me, that's going to be the bit that also needs to be done. You know, we need to think about that broader part of how we do this, rather than just the one bit. This came up with the discussion we had with Tony Askew, and it was, you know, we're not just doing this alone. You know, corporates who think they go into this and they're going to manage the whole deal and investment only by themselves and sort of stuff like that, you know, that's not realistic. So, you know, we know that the most successful ventures are ones where entrepreneurs have done this previously, or they've had a failure which has given them the lessons to then be successful next time. So it's, well, who knew about how they dealt with the last crisis for them to make this one a success? So it's those bits that I think we need to get skilled in as well, and building those relationships and getting that feel without necessarily physically meeting or having to fly to San Francisco to have a 2-hour meeting and then flying back to the UK sort of type thing. Can we do those things more effectively as well? Bernard, thank you for giving us some great insights about Evonik, about the particular process you've done over the last 8 years within Evonik and previously, and your experience in your current in the current crisis. I think the discussion that we've shared here has been fantastic around how we're triaging the current ventures and also really thinking forward. I think this call particularly has been really rich in the discussion about how the new business models and how we're looking at new venture investments, I think has been a good addition to the previous sessions and that we've had. So Bernard, I'd like to thank you and thank others on that round the call. If there's
Thank you very much. Thanks for bringing this up, Andrew.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you for joining us. And do subscribe to the podcasts or to the videos and look at any of our resources. Feel free to drop us an email or a message and be very happy to follow up. Thank you.